Lake Michigan is famous for its shipwrecks, but at one time it also held more than 100 sunken World War II fighter planes. During the war, the United States Navy needed pilots who could take off from aircraft carriers on the Pacific Ocean and attack Japanese fighters. So over the course of 3 years, more than 15,000 pilots went through aircraft carrier training on Lake Michigan, including former President George H.W. Bush. Kalamazoo College alum John Davies has produced a documentary on the subject. It'll premiere at K College on February 16th. And he's here with me on the phone from Los Angeles. Hi, John.
Hi.
When I spoke to you before, you actually said that you admitted to not being the best history student at Kalamazoo College, but now you can't get enough of it. You know, what changed your mind?
Well, I think there's something about as you get older, you tend to look back. I think when you're young, you're just looking forward, as you should be. But I think every year, I think when I hit my mid-30s is when I really start developing a bigger interest in history. And now I'm 62, so now I'm really interested in it. And also, I did grow up with parents who lived in the United Kingdom, England, during World War II. And so they always kept World War II front and center in our house. It came up a lot. So I wasn't so good at history in general, but I'd always been steeped in that history from my mom and dad. But again, I think it was more a function of age that I started to look back. And I regret that now because there were so many great history teachers at Kalamazoo College I should have paid attention to.
Now, this is not the first documentary you've done. You've done a couple of documentary-style TV series. Run's House with Run DMC is one that comes to my mind. And you're also pretty widely known for producing stand-up comedy films. So, you know, what made it you turn to this interest of yours about World War II fighter planes?
Well, every couple of years, because I live in California, I'm a producer out here, I produce stuff for almost every network at one time or another. Every couple of years, I want to do something that is really I have a passion for, and those projects usually don't pay that much. In other words, you have to keep the mortgage going and everything else from the regular television work. Like Run's House was a very commercial thing for MTV. But every now and then, I want to step out of the rat race out here in L.A. and do something that really I have a passion for. So that means I'm not going to make a lot of money. And so this was something I had a passion for. I always knew about this story. And I had some friends still living in Chicago who were divers, and my partner, Harvey Moshman, my other executive producing partner, he kept pushing me to do it, and he'd been filming some of these recoveries since 2006, and then every time I would go and visit Harvey in Chicago, I would do an interview with somebody who knew something about this, and pretty soon we realized we had all the footage we needed to make the film. We just needed someone to step in and finance the last step. And we'd found someone, a man named Captain Dave Truitt of the Chicago Marine Heritage Society. He said, "What do you guys need?" We gave him a figure, and that made it become a reality. And that's often how independent documentaries come together. You find an angel out there somewhere.
Well, I'm glad that you found yours. And, you know, you mentioned your diver friends. I think that half of this story really is following those divers as they pull up plane after plane from the depths of Lake Michigan. You know, what was that like being on the boat with them?
Well, you'd have to ask Harvey that because I wasn't there for a single day of that, which it's too bad. I live in California. He lives in Chicago. But as he was getting that done, I was getting footage ordered and all these other things. And also our other partner, Brian Callies, who produced the film with us, he's a tremendous documentary editor. He was pulling together imagery. So each one of us kind of had a task. Harvey's was to stay on the dive operation. And he shot that footage from between 2009 and 2013. So this was a long time coming together. But finally, we had all the material, and we had put that together. We had gathered it very inexpensively. And then, we found our angel, Captain Dave Truitt, and he wrote a check for us to finish it. And, Harvey was very, very diligent. But he's also diving is his passion. So it wasn't that hard to ask Harvey to join those guys on that boat. He loved it.
And you said that they have pulled up about, not these specific divers, but over time, Divers have pulled up about 40 planes from Lake Michigan.
Yeah, they think there's somewhere just over 100 wrecks on the bottom, and they're various types of planes. And that since the late 1970s, they've pulled up a total of 40 planes. This is all under supervision of the Pensacola Naval Aviation Museum down in Florida. They have a special relationship with the Navy to recover and restore these Navy planes. Now, technically, these planes are all still owned by the Navy, but when they recover them, they put them out on loan to various museums and associations like the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo, Michigan. They have a couple of these planes there.
Why did so many of these planes end up in the water? I mean, this was just a training exercise to help these pilots land and take off from these aircraft carriers, right?
Right. Well, one of the big things that I guess the general public doesn't realize is that military training exercises are extremely dangerous. I've heard figures that almost as many men are injured or killed in the training exercises as there are in actual battle sometimes. So what happened here was after the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor, the Navy realized we're going to have to pursue this war way out in the Pacific, and we're going to need carriers and carrier pilots. So they quickly rounded up 15,000 guys to train to become carrier pilots, and they trained them in the safety of Lake Michigan. And out of 15,000 pilots training in a three-day class is basically what it was, one day in the classroom, one day practicing on the land, and the third day practicing on the lake, landing on actual makeshift flat-top aircraft carriers. Out of those 15,000 guys, you know, there was only a couple of hundred serious incidents, and a little over 100 of those involved the plane actually going into the drink, as the Navy guys would say, and sinking to the bottom. So it's really it's a very low accident ratio when you consider the number of people that were trained. And it wasn't just the 15,000 pilots that were trained. It was 40 to 50,000 deck crews that were also trained. All of these guys eventually ended up in the Pacific fighting the Japanese. And without them, it's our feeling and the Navy's feeling and historians' feeling, we wouldn't have won the war with Japan.
Why were these pilots so important to the war, you believe?
Well, when you've got, Japan had basically taken over all these islands and other territories spread out all over the Pacific. The only way you were going to get to these was by to bring a carrier nearby and then take the planes off from the carrier to bomb and force the Japanese into retreat. And so without pilots, you couldn't have done this. Basically, pilots would soften up these places first before an invading force would go in. And the Navy also had huge battleships doing the same thing in the Pacific. But without these pilots to take on the Japanese Air Force, to shoot them out of the sky, to keep our soldiers safe, to soften up the islands before our invading forces would invade, you really would have had a very difficult time slowly but surely conquering Japan. And eventually they mopped up all these different islands that the Japanese had controlled and forced them back to the mainland of Japan, offered to have them surrender. Of course, they didn't, and you know what came next. They dropped a nuclear bomb on them. But it was the Navy pilots and the Navy in general that really drove this invasion of all these islands and pushed Japan back onto their homeland.
Now, let's talk a little bit about these aircraft carriers in Lake Michigan. I know that there weren't really a lot of current aircraft carriers available at the time. You know, they were all out during the war doing what they had to do. So can you kind of describe what the Navy did to get these other aircraft carriers?
Sure. Well, actually, there were only 7 aircraft carriers left. I think there were 4 in the Atlantic and 3 in the Pacific. And they couldn't take them out of service to train guys, so they came up with the idea of building 2 makeshift aircraft carriers in Lake Michigan. And what they did was they took 2 old sidewheel passenger steamers. These were kind of luxury ships for passengers who would cruise around the Great Lakes going to various cities, enjoying themselves on holidays. They took these 2 old ships and they cut the top decks off and literally just put a a wooden runway on top of one of them and a steel runway on top of the other. One of the ship's name was the C&B. The other was the Greater Buffalo. And they were both converted into what we call makeshift aircraft carriers. But they were the only two side-wheel coal-fired aircraft carriers in the Navy. And they were purpose-built. They were just built for this one purpose, just to train these guys. As soon as the war was over, they were both scrapped because they just didn't have enough of the accoutrements that a normal aircraft carrier has. They didn't have below decks. They didn't have armament. They were literally there just to train guys, to give them a little exposure to what it's like to land on a pitching deck in a huge body of water. And all the pilots I spoke to said it really did help that by the time they got to the Pacific, they'd actually had some experience landing on a flat top.
Yeah, it doesn't sound easy from what the documentary tells us, that they're hard to see, these aircraft carriers, sometimes at certain elevations. Lake Michigan is a pretty windy place. You know, the waves can get pretty large, as I'm sure that they can on the Pacific Ocean. What are some other challenges that these pilots had in landing on this aircraft carrier and taking off?
Well, I mean, I know planes are complicated today. There's so much electronics guys are dealing with, and it's really a young man's game. I mean, this generation that's so computer-oriented is perfectly suited to these modern planes. But the guys that were perfectly suited to the planes of World War II, a lot of these guys were right off the farm, but they knew machinery. They knew mechanics. And these were very analog, mechanical planes. I mean, I watched a training video about how to fly the F-4U Corsair, and I watched it with my partner, Brian Callies, who edited the movie. And he and I were looking at it, and when we were done, I looked at him and I said, God, that's complicated. He said, John, that's only part one. There's part two. So these guys, these were big, giant pieces of metal with huge, powerful engines in them. No electronic aids whatsoever, no guidance systems. They'd have to find these carriers themselves and land on it. And they were using really old-school technology, really old-school technology. After landing and taking off, of course, they would have to find the enemy. So navigational skills were required that pilots today get a lot of help with. So those were the big challenges. And then if they had to come back at night, you can imagine without GPS and all these other things we have now, this was really daunting to find the Japanese, strike them, and get back safely to the carrier. And of course, many, many, many of them did not get back.
John Davies, documentary filmmaker and TV producer.
TV producer and former K College student.
And former K College student. Thank you so much for talking with me. If you're interested, you can see Davies' film Heroes on Deck, Tuesday, February 16th at Kalamazoo College. It'll show in the Dalton Theater at 7 p.m. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much for having me on.